Rumpole and the Expert Witness by John Mortimer, adapted by Richard Stoneman. Starring me, Timothy West, as the elder Horace Rumpole, and Benedict Cumberbatch as the younger Horace Rumpole. In the autumn of 1964, I learned, as did the rest of the world, or at least the rest of London and the home counties, of the death of Sally Dacre. I was seated at breakfast in the matrimonial home at Froxbury Mansions in the Gloucester Road, ingesting Darjeeling tea, Oxford marmalade and burnt toast, when the headline caught my eye, and I gave a discreet whistle of surprise. My wife Hilda, she who must be obeyed, was reading her correspondence, a letter on mauve paper from an old school friend, but demanded her share of the news.
What is it, Rumpole? Has the Third World War begun? Has Comrade Khrushchev launched his missiles at Washington, D.C.?
No, but a Dr. Dacre of Dorking has been arrested and charged with murder.
Dorking? How dull.
He killed his wife, allegedly.
I have a letter from Dodo. You remember my friend, Dodo McIntosh?
The one who keeps a tea shop in Devon. Nasty young woman, covered in tweed.
She always speaks fondly of you, Rumpole.
Can't imagine why.
And she wants me to pop down and stay with her in Barnstable.
Well, you should. You really should. Taking young Nicholas with you, of course. Good boy. This man, Dr. Dacre, the name rings a bell.
Dodo says she's depressed. You know, she still isn't married.
Then I can't think why she's depressed.
Was what I thought, but didn't say. Instead, I suddenly remembered.
Dr. Harry Dacre. He gave evidence of my greatest triumph, the Penge Bungalow murders. But this can't be him, surely. No. Dr. Ned Dacre charged. Cause of death, cerebral hemorrhage, sustained in an alleged attack.
You're not going to chambers like that, are you, Rumpole? Yeah.
Like what, Hilda?
Well, your stud is showing, and you've got marmalade on your waistcoat. Oh, and you have to wear trousers with quite so many stains on them. Not to mention the hole in that pocket.
But then don't mention the hole in that pocket. Just leave me alone.
But if you look like a tramp...
Do you hear this, Nicholas? Do you hear this constant bombardment of complaints? This is what I have to put up with on a daily basis. But you lucky young chap... You have no one to argue with. Yet.
We don't have to argue.
Well, unless you refuse to speak, I think we do.
Or you could do the right thing, without being reminded all the time.
The right thing? I've no idea what you're talking about.
Which is why I have to keep reminding you, Rumpole.
Dr. Dacre is charged with the murder of his wife. The murder... of his wife.
When I eventually escaped the clutches of She Who Must, I made my way, without enthusiasm, to my chambers to await a rather dull defrauding of the customs and excise at Uxbridge Magistrates Court. Since the case wasn't due to start until 2:30, I took the opportunity to waste some of the morning by complaining to Henry, our clerk, about the run-of-the-mill nature of my legal diet.
Why are there never any nice murders on my menu?
I do my best, sir.
Do you, Henry? Do you really?
I've sorted your correspondence. Just a couple of letters this morning. Quite official by the look of the envelopes.
Small manila with nasty little windows. These are communications from Her Majesty's Commissioners of Revenue. Where's the nearest bin?
Don't you throw them away, Rumpole. Deal with them properly.
You deal with them, Erskine Brown. Reading letters from the revenue only produces palpitations of the heart, in my case.
In my case, I won a long battle on the subject of pinstripe trousers. I said they were absolutely necessary for our work at the bar. I'm now taking off 2 pairs of pinstripe trousers per year.
You take your trousers off twice a year?
Absolutely. It's a legitimate claim which has been recognised as such by the Inland Revenue.
I hate to interrupt.
Oh, please do, Henry, please do.
It's just the Tea and Coffee Fund.
What's the Tea and Coffee Fund?
Time to pay up, gents. This month's subscription,
So soon?
The tepid brown liquid that comes round mid-morning. We have to pay for that.
If you don't like it, Mr. Rumpole, you don't have to drink it.
But you're still asking us to pay for it.
Well, it's only fair, Mr. Erskine Brown. We all chip in. That way we keep the prices down.
I hadn't realised we'd become communists.
We haven't. The tea's from India, not China. So 1 shilling from each of you, when you're ready.
Here's my contribution. In return, perhaps you can brew me up a tasty little manslaughter.
I can't promise you anything, Mr. Rumpole. But there's a Dr. Harry Dacre waiting to see you. Seems his son's in a spot of bother.
The son who's been arrested for murder?
That's him.
Yes. I think I'd call that a spot of bother.
I've put Dr. Dacre in your room, sir. Hope that meets with your approval.
Dr. Dacre in my room. I began to sniff the memory of a never-to-be-forgotten victory. When I opened my door, I was greeted by a witness whose evidence had marked a turning point in the Penge Bungalow trial.
Dr. Dacre, good morning.
Mr. Rumpole, how very good to see you again.
And you, though I'm sorry the circumstances are rather different to the last time we met.
Yes, from expert witness to father of the accused.
Accused, but not yet found guilty, and therefore still innocent, so chin up. And do sit down.
Thank you. Thank you. I told my son he should stop worrying now I'd found you again. Ned, I said, Mr. Rumpole knows all there is to know about blood, about dead bodies, about all things medical. When it comes to pathologists and their half-baked opinions, Mr. Rumpole is the man to debunk them, to deflate them, to rip them apart and expose them for the charlatans they really are.
Yes. I do my best. You still a GP in Penge?
I'm afraid so. Stuck in my ways. Not a young man like you with all the freedom and dreams for the future that I'm sure you enjoy.
Well, actually, I'm now married with a son.
Congratulations.
Yes. I suppose so.
I hope your own son never brings you a problem like this.
Charged with the murder of his wife?
You read all about it in the papers, I expect.
In the Times this morning, so it must be true. His arrest, I mean. Not that he actually did it.
Oh, of course he didn't do it. Though it was, I suppose, what you might call a stormy marriage.
Is there any other kind?
Sally is. It was. An extremely pretty girl. Terribly spoiled, of course, and she did have her problems.
What kind of problems?
Nervous trouble. But then half the women in Dorking have a touch of the nervy.
So, as the prosecutors might say, on the night in question?
Yes.
What happened?
I don't know. I wasn't there.
But I presume your son told you?
Of course.
So, perhaps you could tell me. Let's start with the medical evidence.
There's no doubt the cause of death was a cerebral hemorrhage. But it's the other findings that pose the problems. And that's why I thought of you, Mr. Rumpole. The way you destroyed the pathologist's evidence of the Penge Bungalow case.
Yes, yes. And much as I'd love to reminisce about that memorable and indeed remarkable cross-examination, I fear the Uxbridge magistrates wait for no man.
Uxbridge.
Put Uxbridge from your mind. And tell me all about the other medical findings.
Multiple bruising on the body, particularly the legs, back and buttocks, and the wound on the head where the deceased girl fell and knocked the edge of the coffee table.
The deceased girl?
I meant Sally, of course.
Of course. So, the blow from the coffee table caused the hemorrhage to the brain?
Undoubtedly. The trouble is, the pathologist says the bruising to the body was inflicted before death, the implication being that my son beat his wife.
Is that likely?
I told you Sally was a spoilt and highly strung young girl. Her father was Peter Gaveston of Gaveston Electronics. Tons of money, so she always had everything she wanted. Of course she quarrelled with Ned. Don't all married couples quarrel?
Being married to she who must be obeyed, I had no reason to doubt the doctor's diagnosis.
Ned would never have beaten his wife so badly that...
But he might have beaten her not quite so badly?
That's not what I meant.
I'm very glad to hear it.
Ned didn't beat his wife. At all.
Good. Tell me, who is the pathologist with whom I'm about to go into battle?
A local quack. Does all the post-mortems in that part of Surrey.
Would I have heard of him?
Not him. Her. Dr. Pamela Gall. And the irony is, Ned knows Pamela extremely well. They were at Bart's together before he met Sally. Ned brought Pamela home for the weekend once or twice. I almost thought they might get married. until he met poor Sally.
I was beginning to feel some sympathy for Dr. Ned Dacre. It's bad enough to be put on trial for murder without having your ex-girlfriend examine your deceased wife's body and provide what turns out to be the only real evidence for the prosecution.
I don't understand. I simply don't understand.
Dr. Ned Dacre sat with me in a prison interview room in Wandsworth, looking baffled and bewildered by how he came to be there.
We had our disagreements, Sally and I, but don't all married couples quarrel?
Your father said exactly the same thing.
And did you agree with my father?
Yes, but not every married couple ends up with one dead and the other banged up in the nick on a charge of murder.
Was what I thought, and then realised I'd actually said it, too, which was why Dr. Ned appeared a little shocked.
No. No, I suppose not.
As I looked at the charming young doctor, I found it hard to imagine him brutally beating his wealthy wife to death.
Your father told me that Sally was depressed from time to time. Was she depressed about anything in particular?
No. In fact, I always thought Sally had everything she could possibly hope for. I couldn't imagine why she was down in the dumps.
Did she drink a lot?
We'd share a bottle of wine with most of our meals. Do you think that was excessive?
One bottle between two? No, I wouldn't call that excessive. The pathologist's report tells us there was a good deal of alcohol in Sally's blood on the night she died. Had she drunk more than half a bottle of wine?
It's possible. I didn't watch her in the kitchen. I never spied on her or kept an eye on what she was drinking.
And did you quarrel that evening, like all married couples?
Actually, no. We had a discussion about where we'd go for our holiday and settled on Paris. Sally had never been there, and I'd only spent a weekend once, before we met.
A romantic weekend in Paris? With whom, I wondered.
So you had a meal, some wine, you discussed where to go on your halls. Then what?
Sally thought she might have a nightcap, a brandy.
So she did have more to drink?
No. She poured one for herself, but then she stumbled. Fell forwards.
Forwards? You're sure of that?
Yes, I'm certain. She fell forwards and her forehead hit the corner of the coffee table.
Which caused the cerebral hemorrhage?
I can only think so.
Your friend, the pathologist...
Hardly my friend any longer.
The pathologist, she says she found extensive bruising on your wife's back, her buttocks, and the back of her legs.
That's what I can't understand.
You're quite positive she didn't fall backwards.
I gave him a chance to change his story. Any member of the Timpson family would have taken the hint, but not Dr. Ned.
She fell forwards.
And you can't account for the alleged bruises on her back?
No. Though there is one thing I ought perhaps to tell you.
About your wife?
About Pamela Gall. We were both at Bart's together.
And you spent a romantic weekend in Paris together?
But how could you possibly know that?
An inspired guess. Do you think Pamela Gall, the Crown's expert witness, might be helpful in court?
I'm afraid she'll do everything she can to get me convicted.
I began to sniff the faint, faraway odour of a defence.
Pamela was a very possessive girl. She was always terribly jealous.
You mean when you married Sally?
Oh, before then. She became very jealous as soon as I met poor Sally. I suppose after that weekend in Paris, Pam thought we might get married. Then I didn't ring her. I started seeing Sally and I began to get the most awful letters and phone calls. Pamela was threatening...
Threatening what?
To tell my father or my patients or the GMC that she was pregnant.
Would any of those august bodies have cared?
Not in the least. It wasn't true anyway. And then she seemed to calm down for a while. But I still got letters on my wedding anniversary and on some date which Pamela seemed to think was important.
Perhaps the day your affair started or ended.
Possibly. I really can't remember. She got her job as a home office pathologist. I hoped she might settle down and get married and forget about me.
But she never did. get married, I mean.
Nor, I'm afraid, did she forget about me. I had a dreadful letter a month ago. She said I'd ruined her life by marrying a hopeless drunk, and that she'd tell Sally that we were still seeing each other, unless...
Unless?
Unless we did see each other and continued our affair.
Did your wife read that letter?
No, no. I always got up early, fetched the post while Sally slept late.
But you've kept the letter?
No, I tore it up at once.
Oh. If only people had the sense to realize they might be facing a murder trial at any moment and really ought to keep potentially vital documents.
What else did the letter say?
That Sally would find a way to ruin my life, no matter how long it took her.
Hell hath no fury like a female pathologist scorned. But Dr. Pamela Gall's personal interest in the Dacre murder seemed to provide the only faint hope of a cure for Dr. Ned's desperate condition. I didn't know if a murder case had ever been won by attacking the medical evidence on the grounds of a romantic bias, but I suppose there had to be a first time for everything.
Learned counsel for the prosecution has indicated his intention to call the pathologist next, Mr. Rumpole. Before he does so, may I ask if that will be convenient? You have, I hope, prepared yourself to cross-examine the expert witness.
I have, my lord, and it will be quite convenient, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rumpole.
No, no, thank you, my lord.
Usher, would you be so kind as to invite Dr. Pamela Gall to join us now?
Everything about the Dacre murder trial was thoroughly pleasant. Judge Ronald Carstairs, thoroughly fair and courteous. The thoroughly agreeable Georgian courtroom in the centre of Kingston-upon-Thames.
You may sit.
And counsel for the prosecution, Owen Munro, QC, who seemed thoroughly distressed at having to press such a nasty charge as willful murder against the nice young doctor who sat in the dock, wearing his thoroughly presentable suit and old Bart's tie.
My lord, I fear I shall have to ask the jury to look at the photographs of the victim.
Oh, dear. Bundle number 4, if I'm not mistaken.
You have it, my lord.
Members of the jury, I'm afraid you will find these photographs extremely distressing. It is necessary for you to see them so that you may understand the medical evidence fully, but these things are never pleasant.
In the nicest possible way, the judge was pointing out the horrific nature of the crime of which Dr. Ned was charged. It was something you just didn't do in that part of Surrey.
I swear by Almighty God that the evidence I shall give shall be the truth.
I was aroused from my thoughts by the sound of the pathologist taking her Bible oath. Owen Munro, QC, hitched up his gown, sorted out his papers, and started his examination in chief.
Dr. Pamela Gall.
Yes?
Did you examine the body of the late Sally Dacre, the deceased in this case?
I did, yes.
Just tell us what you found, if you will.
I found a well-nourished woman of 35 years of age, ruddy in complexion and short in stature. She died from a cerebral hemorrhage.
Unlike the well-nourished, ruddy and short deceased, Dr. Pamela was slim, pale and tall. She was, in fact, reminiscent of a pre-Raphaelite beauty. Her cold black eyes glowed with some unknown obsession. Either love of her gloomy work or hatred of Dr. Ned.
You say you find widespread bruising on the deceased's back and buttocks. With what was that consistent?
I thought it was consistent with a violent attack from behind. I thought Mrs. Dacre had probably been struck and kicked, but... Well, it appeared that she was alone that evening with her husband.
My lord, I really must...
Object, Mr. Rumpole. You are perfectly right to do so. Dr. Gall, it is not for you to say who beat this lady and kicked her. That is entirely a matter for the jury. But I understand your evidence is that she was kicked and beaten by someone.
Yes, my lord.
Kicked and beaten. Thank you, Mr. Munro.
Thank you, my lord.
Yes, thank you very much indeed, my lord.
So, doctor, the immediate cause of death was...
A cerebral hemorrhage, as I said.
Could you form any opinion as to how that came about?
Just a moment, Mr. Munro. Mr. Rumpole, do you have any objection if the witness forms an opinion?
My lord, I wouldn't seek to prevent this witness saying anything she wishes in her effort to implicate my client in his wife's tragic death.
So, that's a no, yes?
Yes, a no.
Thank you, Mr. Rumpole. Thank you, Mr. Munro.
Oh, thank you, my lord.
Oh, for God's sake.
Not at all. You may now answer my question.
I'm sorry. What was your question?
In your opinion, how did the cerebral hemorrhage come about?
In my opinion, the deceased had received a blow to the head in the course of the attack.
The attack you've already described?
Yes, my lord.
Thank you, Dr. Gall. Hey, would you stay where you are, please? My learned friend may have a question.
Dr. Gall, I wonder if you can help me with a number...
I'm so sorry to interrupt, Mr. Rumpole, but I'm rather concerned with the length of time the jury has spent in court already today, and with such harrowing exhibits to examine. I'm of a mind to finish proceedings a little early.
A little early? It's only 3:15, my lord.
I thought also that you might welcome some additional time to prepare your cross-examination of this expert witness, given the strength of the evidence we've just heard.
Oh, why not just tell the jury that my client is guilty?
Was what I thought, but didn't say.
I'm much obliged, my lord.
Were the words I forced out between my clenched teeth, which later gripped a small cheroot between them as I sat in my room in chambers. I was inhaling the noxious fumes when I received a visit from my learned friend Claude Erskine Brown. He had the grave face and suppressed excitement of a man who'd just unearthed a serious scandal.
Rumpole! In this not undistinguished set of chambers...
You mean this stable of moderate legal hacks?
What do we stand for above all else?
What do we stand for?
Yeah.
I'd say we provide a place of refuge for villains in distress.
I'd say we stand for justice and for honesty. Surely it's up to us, Rumpole, to set an example.
An example? Not sure if I'm with you.
Oh, that's why it's so particularly distressing when lawlessness is to be found even in this very building.
What have you done, Erskine Brown? Unburden yourself.
Oh, Rumpole, I implore you to be serious for a moment.
Why?
Have you any idea what we pay for the tea and coffee fund each week?
Yes.
Of course you don't. But I happened to be in the clerk's room and saw the petty cash book lying on Henry's desk.
You want to confess to an indecent assault upon Henry's petty cash book?
No. He is charging us 1 shilling a month, each, for coffee money.
Well, coffee beans don't grow on trees.
Yes, they do. More to the point. I've made inquiries at local shops, and a large jar of instant coffee costs no more than 8 shillings at the most, and it lasts for heaven knows how long. Henry is getting a shilling every month from every one of us, and therefore making a profit of, a profit of, 20 times, minus 8. But he's making a profit. Let's leave it at that.
God, this is unbelievable.
Isn't it just?
There's only one thing that disturbs me.
What's that, Rumpole?
May I point out, you have some rather unpleasant stains on the back of your trousers. And a shiny bottom.
My bottom? Well, of course it's shiny. I haven't bought a new pair of trousers in years.
Haven't you really? How very interesting.
That evening at Casa Rumpole, I examined and re-examined the pathologist's notes, the photographs, and report. If I couldn't break down the medical evidence, our case was hopeless. Was it possible Dr. Ned had really beaten his wife to death? If so, what could have provoked such a brutal assault?
Rumpole? Oh. Rumpole!
What is it, Hilda?
Nicholas is out of the bath.
I'll alert the newspapers.
You said you'd put him to bed and read him a story.
No, Hilda, you said that's what you'd like me to do, but I don't believe I entered into any such contract, written or verbal.
Must I deal with Nicholas every night?
No, no. On the evenings when you have a murder brief to study, I shall happily take on the domestic chores.
You always pretend you have a brief to study.
Pretend?
I know your tricks too well.
The fate of a gifted young doctor lies in my hands, and you accuse me of playing tricks.
When did you last spend any time with Nicholas?
I have to work. No work, no money. No money, no food.
Ah, no money, no wine. Isn't that what concerns you more than whether your family has something to eat?
Daddy, I want some.
Oh, go and see him, Rumpole. Read him a story.
I have to read this brief.
Read it aloud. To Nicholas.
It concerns a man accused of beating his wife to death.
Oh.
Hardly suitable material for bedtime.
Then make something up. You're good at that.
Meaning?
Your excuses for working late in chambers. The solicitors you simply have to have a drink with to secure some fictitious business. The journalists to far-flung prisons that no one's ever heard of.
You know, Hilda, I was trying to imagine what could possibly irritate a mild-mannered husband so much he resorts to violence and ends up killing she whom... ends up killing his beloved wife.
And?
It's a complete mystery to me.
After a peaceful night in separate bedrooms, I returned to Kingston to cross-examine Dr. Pamela Gall. As she took her place in the witness box, looking slimmer, taller, and even more pre-Raphaelite than before, I stood in the silent court, shuffling the photographs and the doctor's notes, wondering whether to lead slowly up to my charge of bias, gently laying what traps I could on the way, or go in with all guns blazing. And then I made a decision. I would start with my best point.
Dr. Gall, you knew Dr. Ned Dacre very well, yes?
We were at Bart's together.
And went out together, as the saying goes.
Occasionally, yes.
Going out, which so often means staying in.
I'm not sure what you're implying.
Yes, I think it might be helpful if you made yourself a little clearer, Mr. Rumpole.
Very well, my lord. Dr. Gall, you and Dr. Dacre took a short holiday in Paris when you were medical students, yes?
Yes, that's correct.
Did you become, what expression would you like me to use? His girlfriend? Mistress? Paramour?
We shared a bed.
Presumably not for the purpose of revising your anatomy notes together.
He was my lover, if that's what you mean.
Thank you, Dr. Gall. I'm sure the members of the jury understand now. And I would also like the jury to understand how you felt when Dr. Dacre got married.
I was disappointed.
But also angry? Angry and jealous of the lady whose dead body you've recently examined.
I suppose I was upset that Ned, Dr. Dacre, married someone else.
So upset you wrote him a letter only a week or so before this tragedy, in which you told him you wanted to hurt him as much as you possibly could.
I may have done.
You may have done? But by then Dr. Dacre had been married for 8 years and his wife had borne him 2 children. And yet you were still harbouring this terrible grudge.
There are some things you don't forget, Mr. Rumpole.
And there are some things you don't forgive, Dr. Gall. Have your feelings of jealousy and hatred for my client in any way coloured your evidence against him?
I expected her to deny this, of course. I was therefore surprised by the prolonged silence that followed my question. I pressed her gently for an answer.
Have your feelings coloured your evidence, Dr. Gall?
Only she knew if she was biased. If she denied the suggestion vehemently, no one could have contradicted her. But instead, she finally came out with...
I don't think so.
Her lack of conviction provoked the jury's clear disapproval. Seizing the moment, I moved on to deal with the medical evidence.
Dr. Gall, after death, a body becomes subject to a condition called hypostasis, yes?
Yes.
The blood drains to the lowest area when circulation ceases.
Yes.
So if a body had been lying on its back, the blood would naturally drain to the buttocks and the backs of the legs.
Yes.
I'm so sorry, but did you say that Mr. Rumpole is correct?
Yes, my lord.
Thank you, Dr. Gall. Thank you, Mr. Rumpole.
Thank you, my lord. Thank you, Dr. Gall. Now, let us be very careful here. The draining of the blood causes discoloration of the skin of a dead body, which can look like bruising.
It can look exactly like bruising, yes.
I began to get an eerie feeling that it was all going too well.
It is difficult to tell simply by the colour of the skin if a patch is caused by hypostasis or bruising. It can be very misleading, yes?
Yes.
So you must insert a knife under the skin to see what has caused the discoloration, must you not?
That is the standard test, yes.
If some blood flows, it is hypostasis. But if the blood under the skin has coagulated and does not flow, it is probably a bruise.
What do you have to say about that, Dr. Gall?
I would say, my lord, that Mr. Rumpole is well equipped to lecture on forensic medicine.
It was going far too well.
So what happened when you inserted a knife into the coloured portions?
She looked worried. She said nothing. Eventually, in a voice absent of any contrition, she admitted...
I didn't.
Didn't what?
I didn't carry out that particular test.
Oh, didn't you?
I tried to sound calm and neutral to hide my incredulity. The judge made no such effort.
Can you tell us why on earth you failed to carry out what you just admitted was the standard test?
I'm afraid I must have jumped to the conclusion that they were bruises.
You jumped to the conclusion?
The overly polite Mr. Justice Carstairs had vacated the bench to make way for a red-faced, overly excited Mr. Justice Carstairs.
But you do realize the jury will not be asked to convict Dr. Dacre by jumping to conclusions.
My lord is, of course, perfectly correct, Dr. Gall. The case against Dr. Dacre has to be proved beyond reasonable doubt so that the jury are sure. Can I take it that you're not sure that there were any bruises at all?
Not as you put it now. No, I'm not sure.
Too easy.
And so you're also not sure Mrs. Sally Dacre was attacked by anyone?
I can't be sure of that, no.
She may have simply stumbled. Stumbled because she was drunk, hit her head against the coffee table, and died of the resulting cerebral hemorrhage.
It might have happened that way. Yes.
In other words, an accident.
Yes. I must admit that's possible.
Thank you, Dr. Gall.
It was all over, bar the odd bit of shouting. The judge calmed down and told the jury that, in view of the concessions made by the expert witness, there really was no evidence on which they could possibly convict the good Dr. Dacre, and directed them to stop the case and pronounce those two words which were always music to the young Rumpole's ears, not guilty. We all went outside into the fresh Kingston air, where loyal patients came to shake Ned's hand and congratulate him as politely as if he'd just won first prize for growing the longest leek.
I knew you'd come up trumps, Mr. Rumpole. I shall never forget this. Never.
It was nothing.
Oh, don't be silly. My son, a free man, and all thanks to you. Ned, come and join us, will you?
Right with you, Father.
Seems to have quite a few admirers.
He's a very popular GP.
So popular, even the expert witness seems pleased to see him acquitted.
What?
Well, that is Dr. Gall patting his arm, is it not?
Oh, just trying to get through the crowd, I expect.
But I saw the smile they exchanged and the wink from Dr. Ned before they parted and he joined us.
My father was right, Mr. Rumpole. You really are the best.
Nonsense. It was easy. Too easy.
Why on earth would you say that?
I really couldn't answer. So I didn't.
Oh, is that you, Rumpole? I thought you were still in Kingston.
I was. I am. I'm on my way home, Erskine Brown.
Well, better to change at Waterloo and take the tube from there, surely, rather than come all the way to Chancery Lane and then...
I just fancied a glass or two of Chateau Thames Embankment. Is that a crime? If it is, I'll be sure to ask you to defend me.
You know, I still have a problem with coffee in chambers.
Oh, then don't drink it.
No, it's not the drinking. It's the paying. I had a word with Diane. You know, the new typist. She likes to wear those flowery cotton blouses with the buttons, some of which remain undone. Well, anyway, she's been helping Henry with the kitty for the coffee.
The coffee kitty?
Yes. Well, not Diane's fault, and I tried to reassure her that no one was blaming her. But she didn't seem to welcome my concern. Shrugged off my comforting arm, pushed my hand away.
Could you get to the point, if you actually have one?
Embezzlement. That's all I have to say.
Pinstriped trousers. Ditto.
What?
Pinstriped trousers. Barristers for the use of. What would you say if I... if anyone, Erskine Brown, charged the commissioners of Inland Revenue for the purchase of two brand new pairs of pinstriped trousers a year and went on sporting the same stained, shiny, bottomed old bags that had been run up for use since our call to the bar?
I'd say that would amount to deception and making a false return.
Ah. Do you really want to raise the coffee money business at the next chamber's meeting? When there is already so much deception in the air.
No, I don't think so. On second thoughts, I really don't think so.
What's that, Rumpole?
Huh? Oh, an invitation to a cocktail party in Dorking.
Oh?
Seems... Dr. Ned Dacre has something to celebrate.
Not being hanged by the neck?
Hmm.
Why aren't you boasting about your brilliance? Isn't that what you normally do when you win a case? Especially when alone and without a leader.
Hmm.
I don't like it when you're pensive, Rumpole.
You don't like it when I'm gregarious, comatose, vivacious, introspective, sarcastic, subdued. Let's face it, Hilda, you'll only be happy when I'm dead.
Rumpole!
I know you didn't deny the charge, that you'd only be happy when...
It's a ridiculous thing to say.
Is it? How many wives wish their husbands dead on a daily basis?
I'm not going to have this discussion over breakfast.
Save it for supper, shall we? Something to look forward to.
You haven't told me the date of the cocktail party.
But you're not thinking of coming with me.
Is the prospect really so appalling?
Well, of course it is.
Was what I thought, but did I say it? From the look on Hilda's face, I might have blurted out some words to that effect. Or perhaps my expression gave the game away. Expressions can sometimes do that. Especially winks and smiles.
Oh, most pernicious woman. Oh, villain. Villain. Smiling. Damned villain. My table's meted as I set it down that one may smile and smile and be a villain. At least I'm sure it may be so in Denmark.
But we're not.
Not what?
In Denmark.
No. But some of us will shortly be in Dorking.
Mr. Rumpole, I'm so glad you could come.
Thank you for inviting me, Dr. Dacre.
Well, I'm so very grateful. I wouldn't be here today if it weren't for you. But where are my manners? You need a drink. Champagne, yes?
Little, thank you.
As the nice young doctor went to pour me some of the finest vintage champagne money could buy, I looked around the pleasant room at the pleasant faces of pleasant patients and the charming children handing out finger food. Having maneuvered past three of the most expensive cars I'd ever seen on the front drive, I realized money was suddenly swirling around this part of Dorking in abundance. Dr. Dacre Sr. was the proud owner of an E-type Jag. Dr. Dacre Jr. now drove a Daimler. And the Triumph Spitfire convertible. Who did that belong to? Was it the Queen of the Morgues, to Pamela Gall, who suddenly appeared, dressed up to the nines, sporting an enormous diamond ring, as she smiled beatifically at the pleasant patients and the charming children?
Here we are, Mr. Rumpole. your very good health.
I think I finally understand what the arrangement was.
The arrangement?
Between you, Dr. Pamela Gore, and, for all I know, your father. You planned that Dr. Gore would make some rather silly suggestions about bruises, then admit she was wrong. Now they could never try you for what you really did.
What did I really do?
You smashed your wife's head so hard against a coffee table that you killed her. You murdered her. Or do you deny the charge?
Quiet, quiet. I believe Ned's got something to say.
Well, now all our friends are here under one roof, I would like to make an announcement. Of course, no one can ever replace my beloved Sally. But with my darling children's approval, I'm delighted to tell you there will be another doctor in the Dacre family. Dr. Pamela Gore has agreed to become my wife. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
I was unable to stomach another sip of vintage champagne, which suddenly tasted remarkably sour. And I headed home to my own version of wedded bliss.
Rumpel, I asked you what you plan to do about this.
Nothing I can do. They can't try Dr. Ned again for exactly the same crime. At least he knows I know what he did. I suppose that's something.
But you can't let them get away with murder.
I'm afraid I'll have to. Dr. Ned has inherited his dead wife's substantial estate and will live happily ever after with his new wife. Thanks, in part, to me.
To you?
If I hadn't been up to the mark on forensic pathology, I might have accepted Dr. Pamela's evidence at face value. A lesser barrister would have failed to spot the medical blunders that I seized upon with clinical precision.
Boasting again. That's more like the Rumpole I know, and...
You do realize I would never smash your head against the side of a coffee table?
Oh, Rumpole... I think that's the nicest thing you've ever said to me.
Is it? Well, I mean it. There are far better ways of killing your wife which don't leave incriminating evidence.
Rumpel!
Hilda?
In Rumpel and the Expert Witness by John Mortimer, the elder Horace Rumpel was played by me, Timothy West, and the younger Horace Rumpel was Benedict Cumberbatch. Hilda Rumpel was Jasmine Hyde, Nicholas Rumpel, Louis Taffler Hyde, Henry, Adrian Scarborough, and Claude Erskine Brown, Nigel Anthony. Dr. Ned Dacre was Daniel Wayman, Dr. Harry Dacre, Ewan Bailey, and Dr. Pamela Gore was Claire Skinner. Other parts were played by members of the company. Rumpole and the Expert Witness was adapted by Richard Stoneman, directed by Marilyn Imrie, and is a Catherine Bailey production for BBC Radio 4.